Hello, hello, and welcome to the Mustard Creative Podcast. Today, we have some special guest hosts today with us. We have Bea, and we have Howland, and of course, we have Michelle. But of course, you don't want to hear me just talk and rant. Well, you're probably here to hear me rant, but let's get right into it. This is the post Oscars 2024 podcast. We did a preview podcast episode a couple weeks ago, last month, and that was over 2 hours. We promise we won't go over 2 hours today. But let's get right into the Best Picture category and, of course, who won. What defines a Best Picture film? On our show, we consistently argued that the significance of the Oscars and other awards, including the Academy Awards, stems from their ability to spotlight the most compelling stories of our time. These stories contribute to the legacy and history of human society, showcasing both its flaws and virtues and inspiring growth and improvement within our community. So with that, should Oppenheimer have won Best Picture?
I mean, as someone who hasn't seen it yet, I should probably abstain from that.
Oh, you haven't seen Oppenheimer?
Not yet, unfortunately. I had several chances, and like it just didn't work out.
Oh, okay. I thought
I'm on the same boat. Haven't seen Oppenheimer. So I would abstain.
All right, I will come back to you too. Get ready. I want to hear your Best Picture pick, though, for then the year, based on what you have seen. And going to Michelle, were you happy with Oppenheimer getting the win on that night?
I think, like, it. I mean, it made sense in the sense of topics that are currently happening in our world. Like, war is such a huge thing. I mean, it's always been a huge thing, but just the idea of, like, us being so self-destructive in the things that we're producing, I think that was, like, a really huge topic. And it seems like just, like, the inner struggle of the main character of, like, working on this project and creating this this huge, like, bomb, pretty much. it's kind of like, I don't know, I think it's, like, introspective, even though we personally on individual levels aren't, like, creating bombs. Like, we are creating self-destructive paths, maybe, or self-destructive
futures.
Yeah, futures for us or for other people. Or so I think, like, it was very, I mean, all the films had some kind of level of that, I feel like, but Oppenheimer, it was just, like, such a big scale that it made it universal, but also personal at the same time.
Got you. So you're okay with it winning because of, like, what it talked about and the context of today, 2024, 2023, of, like, hitting the notes about war and the context of war. Okay. I'm going to have to disagree with you. I'm happy for Christopher Nolan. I think it's great that he won a Best Picture. I'm happy that he won Best Director. I think he was the best director, but I have to disagree with you. I still think it's Killers of the Flower Moon. Like, if we're talking about a movie that has the contextual,
See, I haven't seen that one yet.
Yeah, I think so. I'm the only one here that's seen it. But Howland, you've seen it, right?
I'm going to disagree with you on that one.
okay, well, let's get to the disagreement. But, like, I really do believe Killers of the Flower Moon, because of the pacing, the flow, the editing of the movie, the fact that it talked about something like grandiose as, like, the wiping out of a Native American people and taking of their land, but then hit, like, on a personal note with, like, this really destructive and abusive, like, husband and wife relationship that was in the context. It intertwined both those stories very well. Where with Oppenheimer, like, great film. But the J. Oppenheimer personal life, trying to intertwine with his life as, like, Dr. Oppenheimer, making as the leader of the Manhattan Project, it didn't make, like, as much sense. And it didn't flow as easily, in my opinion, throughout the movie as, like, Killers of the Flower Moon did.
I can't compare it to...
I got you there.
Look, I can't compare it to Oppenheimer because, again, I haven't seen it. But I will admit the relationship in Killers of the Flower Moon between Leonardo DiCaprio's character and Lily Gladstone's character, it was very compelling in a very twisted way, you know, like I would say like that is the movie's strength, you know, like this relationship between these two people where one of them is clearly getting into this relationship for very ulterior motives and you're not sure whether he actually loves this woman or whether he's basically just making himself feel better by convincing himself that he loves her, even though he's just marrying her for her money, essentially. And
then slowly poisoning her over time.
Oh yeah, that and poisons her over time. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. But Bea, what about you? What would be your pick instead of Oppenheimer?
Yeah, as I said, I'm very biased towards one specific movie. I knew it wasn't going to win Best Picture, obviously. It was Past Lives. I really loved it. Ah, I think I've seen the movie like four times.
I have heard that. Wow.
Yeah, I loved it. And I feel like because it's a love story, but also it talks about a lot of it talks about immigration more than anything, and I think that's why I really loved it, just because it's personal. It touches immigration in a way that's not as in a very subtle way. It was a very delicate way of portraying immigration, and I think just talking about the movie, I loved how it used romance as a tool to actually tell the story of a person who's going through immigration and who has to say goodbye to her past, you know, which is her life in Korea. Because Past Lives is about, you know, a woman who immigrated from Korea to Canada and then went to New York to make it. And she's now like a playwright, I guess, in New York. I can't remember what she was. But anyway,
a playwright.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think I loved how they used the love story, like the love triangle, to show how she was trying to be at peace with different, like with her identity, one as someone who is from Korea and then another one who is, you know, in New York trying to live the American dream. So it was a very beautiful movie, and I think it was shot using 35mm film, and that added to like the nostalgia of it, like the it had a longing, yearning feeling. So that's why I loved it.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Thoughts? You shot on 35mm, you said?
Yes.
Yeah, Michelle and I both watched it. Based on the buzz I was hearing from people, like non-Hollywood people, I thought Past Lives was actually going to win, like sneakily win out of nowhere. But yeah, it didn't get a lot of hype, I guess, during the Hollywood awards cycle. But I think it's a great movie. Definitely worthy of a Best Picture nomination for sure.
Yeah, that's what I've been hearing.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, I really want to see it.
Yeah, it's on Paramount Plus with the Showtime package. So they have like, because it's an A24 film.
Of course.
But I did want to talk about like that scene in the, I want to say it's a bar with Nora, the wife, and then her friend, who was her like childhood sweetheart boyfriend. And I think it's pronounced Hae-sung or Hae-sung. And then her husband, Arthur. So in that moment, I've heard from people in our last podcast say that that's when she should have just left him right there at the bar. What do you think, Bea, about like her commitment to a relationship? And Michelle, feel free to
left her husband there at the bar?
Yeah, so like that's the tension, right? That's the tension in the movie where like she has that final like weep when he leaves, right? And like she obviously wanted to be with him. I was just gonna say that I was contending like that she did the right thing and she did right by her husband by staying with him. And also just it wouldn't have worked out, but you know, go ahead.
Michelle, I want to hear your thoughts on this too, but I feel like the movie really established from the get-go, from the very beginning, that she loved her husband. They had a beautiful relationship.
Exactly.
There was this the scene where they were in bed together, just talking about what's this? It was the best dialogue in the movie. The guy was saying that you make my life so much richer, and I hope I can do the same thing for you. That's not, the exact way they said it, but that was before the bar scene. And so that really established how loving the relationship is and how, Nora really chose her husband. That's why when I, for me, it's a little surprising to hear that people would think that she would leave her husband for her childhood sweetheart. Well, but I guess there's that tension between them, but it's more of that you can see how you can also see in her posture that she was just very confident in what she chose, like she what kind of life she made for herself. So yeah, Michelle, I want to hear your thoughts.
I think it's like, I mean, just hearing you guys talk about it, it made me realize that the whole relationship between her husband and her high school or her childhood sweetheart was a metaphor for her choosing a life in America versus Korea. So it was like her realizing that, I mean, like obviously she grew up in Korea, so she has like a very special place for Korea in her heart. And that will never really go away. But I think at the end of the movie, when she was crying, but she was like going to her husband, it was like her making that final choice at the end.
Yeah, she was grieving. That's how it felt like for me.
Yeah,
She was
she was like
grieving her
letting
life in
go.
Korea. Exactly. I think there, and I just wanted to add to that, Michelle. I felt like that her childhood sweetheart was her last tie to Korea. And I think it was they explicitly said it in the movie as well. She mentioned that her mom no longer even calls her by her Korean name. Her mom calls her by her American name. So her childhood sweetheart is the only person who calls her by her Korean name. And losing that connection, that really hit me in the end. Because I immigrated from the Philippines, went here for grad school, and still trying to make it here. That's why I love the movie, I guess, because it's pretty personal.
Yeah, that's awesome. Like, do you have that same personal, I guess, tie where people call you from like a more like Filipina name versus your American name?
Oh yeah, for sure. When I first moved here, everybody, because I have, well, not all Filipinos, but some Filipinos, most Filipinos have two first names. So mine is, yeah. So when I first came here, people called me Anna because that was my first name, but I've never been called Anna ever. So people were like, "Is it Anna or is it Anna?" And I'm like, "I don't really care because that's not how people call me." So now that I've been here for a while, I've been just telling people to just call me Bea because that's how I was, that's the name that I went by ever since. So yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And then the last part in Past Lives that was really awesome, was really great that they touched on from a storytelling standpoint and how they used it within the dialogue between Nora and Arthur and then Nora and Hasong was the idea of the Inyan. I had never heard that concept before, but the idea that like the reason why we've met in this life is because we have this like 10,000 year history. And kind of like in the end, that was also I thought was a like a deciding factor for Nora is that I'm with Arthur because of our past. Like because Sung and I were never meant to be together. Kind of deal. If I read that right.
I mean,
Did anyone else pick up on the Indian? Or yeah, go ahead,
I mean,
Emily.
I haven't seen the movie, but I don't think there's really a right way to read it. If that's what you took from it, then that sounds, like that's what you took from it. So.
No, true, true. I also my biggest thing too is a song like he came over to New York from South Korea like he like and it was all raining. He ultimately had feelings for her, but I would have wanted him to be a little bit more direct personally. Like if that had been me, I would have been like, look, like you want to be with me or do you not want to be with me? I'm not playing the Skype game anymore with you. And he just seemed like he didn't have any game. Like he just showed up and he was just like super chill, like walking around with his backpack and everything. Like, dude, are you trying to sweep her off her feet? Are you trying to make a move? Or like, what are you trying to do? Like he was very respectful of the relationship, but I just thought like since you flew all the way over there, obviously for her, like have a direct conversation and just be I'm tired of playing these games with you.
Yeah, I feel like it was this weird, like for him, it was like she's hurt him in the past twice. Like she turned him down twice. And so like for him to really make that move again, it's like she's just going to hurt me all over again. And now it's even more complicated because she's married. So it's like, I don't know, like, would you be super, like, if you were that hurt from somebody turning you down twice after leading you on, would you want to, like, really put yourself out there again for that person? Or, like, how would you feel about that? I don't know. That could be me, like, just not wanting to deal with it anymore. It's like.
That's a great question. What do y'all think?
Oh my goodness. I don't know what his intentions are. That's my question. Because he's just been searching for her. That was the context, right? He's always like looking for her. Mm-hmm. But you're right. He never really made it clear what he wanted in a way. I'm trying to recall. Yeah.
Like he never stated, I want to be with you. He just kept making like inferences to it. So. Mm-hmm. Again, if it had been me and I flew all the way from there, spent all this money, and also like I'm in between this relationship with this one lady who I was like supposed to marry, but kind of not marry anyways, I would have been direct, like just been straight up and been like, yo, I want to be with you. Do you want to be with me? Let's work this out. If not, then I'm going to keep it moving, which is totally
cool. I might actually need to see this movie now because, long story short, out of high school, I moved 3,000 miles for a girl. So I might need to Whoa. See this movie now.
Yeah. I would like to hear your perspective on that, Helen, because we talked about your story on the Discord server.
Yeah. So. Okay. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. It doesn't have to be here. It doesn't.
I'm just hearing this and I'm just oh, wow. That sounds very familiar.
Very relatable.
Yeah.
Now you have to see the movie.
Yes, I'm putting it on my list. I mean, it's already on my list, but now it's like going up a few notches.
Yeah.
To me, Past Lives is definitely in the top three for like actually winning, in my personal opinion. Like it's Barbie for me. Then I would say Past Lives, and then third. No, sorry, I'm sorry. It's Killers of Flower Moon, then Barbie, then Past Lives. Like it's definitely top three, and I think it should have got more love. But moving on to best animated feature film, the question is, should Hayao Miyazaki, I don't know why I messed up his name, The Boy and the Heron, that was the winner, and it was like the clear winner from for a mile. But do y'all think that should have been the winner for best animated feature film? The other nominees were Elemental, Nimona, Robot Dreams, which I don't think anyone's seen. So I don't even think it should have been nominated just based on that. That's just my personal opinion. If you're not available for people to watch, you should not be nominated. But that's just me. And then Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, Ooh. Which should have been the clear winner.
I hate agreeing with that because you know like it's ultimately a sequel with a cliffhanger. But much love to Miyazaki, but I just did not connect to The Boy and the Heron. I wanted to love it and I wanted to appreciate it.
Yeah,
but
me too.
The longer the story kept going, the more I'd say confused I was, because I was just like, okay, like so this is very Alice in Wonderland kind of, but I don't understand anything that's going on.
Yeah, the plot really didn't connect to the main character's struggle.
Yeah.
And then especially when you get to that third act. Now, I've heard some good explanations post-watching it from other people who watched it, that the whole like tower falling was supposed to be, and then the grand uncle was supposed to be like significant of like the fact that you have to make a choice as to whether you're going to accept your new mom and your new life. And if not, you're going to like have like a wobbling kind of falling apart life That was like the basic explanation I heard from someone. Was like,
guess. Yeah,
that makes more sense in hindsight, 2020. But if I can't, if I come out of a movie theater and I'm confused, you know, I don't think that's. And a lot of people were like upset by this movie. So like, it wasn't just me and Howland. And it's like some random.
I wouldn't say I was upset, like, because it's a, it's honestly a gorgeous movie. It's got like lovely animation in it. It's got the music is great, the acting is great, and so on and so forth. It's just, I think I was down with the first maybe 10, 20 minutes or so, but then it just like started getting more and more confusing, and I didn't understand what was happening. Yeah. And not gonna lie, like, you know, I feel like the main character could have, like, I don't know, they could have established him a little bit more, because for the first, I'd say, 10 minutes of the movie, he was very quiet, but I get why he was quiet, but I don't know. I'm rambling.
Yeah, but also, like, in the middle of the film, it seemed like he didn't have a lot of agency. Like, he was being, like grabbed around to, like, go around the different parts of the new world that he was in. It just seemed like,
you know,
he was kind of being babysat, like kind of like those video game quests where you have to like walk a character and protect them from one point to another point. That's honestly, that's what it felt like to me. And didn't seem like the main character had a lot of agency there.
Mm-hmm.
But Bae, it seemed you had something to say.
No, at first I was curious to see this movie, but now that you're describing it to me, maybe I shouldn't really watch it. It might not be a good use of my time.
I still think it's a good use of your time because it's yeah, but I wouldn't spend money on it. Like, if it was in the theater and there was like pay $20 to go see it, I personally would not go and pay $20 to see it again,
because
I saw it twice just to make sure, like, I knew what I was talking about.
Like I'd say the biggest point of confusion for me was the parakeets.
Parakeets were so scary.
They were so random, and I'm just, wait, parakeets? Those are our villains? What? Why? Who is this parakeet king? And why is there? Yeah, like it just felt.
That's right. The
it felt so random and out of nowhere that I didn't know what to make of it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess what also makes a good movie is clarity. You know, like if you leave the movie theater feeling confused, I mean, did the creators really, were they really effective in telling the story or making you feel something? What was their intention behind the movie? What did they want the audience to feel? Or like, what did they want the audience to take away from it? So if it lacks that clarity, I guess then, yeah.
Oh yeah, that makes sense.
Completely agree.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I definitely agree with that, because you want to be clear with your audience. There are times where ambiguity can work. But if, like, most of the movie is too ambiguous, then I don't know. Like, it just, audiences like clarity.
Mm-hmm. Ambiguity can work if it's intentional. And then they were able to deliver it effectively. Because, like cliffhangers, right? You're like, oh, you're left thinking about the movie after. And so you dwell on it. But, yeah. Anyway.
No, very good
point. I was just thinking about Poor Things.
Yes.
Because I just saw it last night.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh. Hmm.
Oh.
Yes. That's why.
Let's finish up Best Feature Animation. Let's jump into Poor Things, because I know a lot of you also thought that would win Best Feature.
Yeah.
But Michelle, did you have any more thoughts to add to The Boy and the Heron?
I mean, I just agree with everything everyone was saying. Like, I feel like, especially just having the idea of, like, you should leave a movie feeling something. I think confusion is a bad thing to feel after a movie, like, unless it's like it's just so thought-provoking. But it wasn't like so thought-provoking that you were thinking like so deeply about it. It was like, wait, what happened?
Yeah.
So, and then I feel like they just tied in everything that they were missing to like the last couple seconds when he was leaving. It's like, oh yeah, this is your mom, and like it's like just throwing that stuff in at the very end of the movie. Like, what? Like, why did you just throw that in? Why wasn't that like sprinkled in throughout? Because it would have made more sense throughout the
whole
thing.
I would actually make an argument that you know, like, it's funny because Across the Spider-Verse definitely ended with a cliffhanger, and I still think it was more of a closed loop story than The Boy and the Heron was. Because, you know, like, even though it's like, okay, you don't know what's going to happen next with Miles and such, but the story itself, like, Across the Spider-Verse is basically, it's Gwen's story, in a way. Like, she has a character arc from beginning to end. It is very well done, and it is just, ooh, that movie just gives me chills anytime I think of it. It was just so impactful.
It was really amazing. It was really amazing. Also in Best Feature, Best Animated Feature Film was Elemental. I'm so glad that movie got a nomination because the movie got a lot of hate.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I was part of that hate train because the trailer did not convince me of anything. But when I actually watched the movie, I loved it. So I was really glad to see it get nominated. Nimona, to me, is still the film that I know a lot of people like, and a lot of people on the internet will probably be mad at me for saying this. But I don't believe it was a Best Animated Feature Film nominee in my
opinion. I don't think it was, but I really appreciated Nimona because, like, the thing is, it took a story that I've seen so many times. It's like, oh, yeah, here's the character who, like, you know, he's on top of the world, and he gets brought down, and he has to partner up with this other character who's an outcast from society. And they have to, like, you know, the one guy has to get his, I guess, position back. But... that the thing that I appreciated about Nimona was it took a story that I'm familiar with, and it basically got all the usual tropes that I've seen before out of the way in like the first 30 minutes. And then when after that point, I was like, wait, this is usually the point where the movie's almost ending and we still got an hour left to go. I don't know what's happening after this. So I really appreciated that about it.
Yeah, I will say, like, the third act, I really appreciate it as well. Just, like, the final battle sequence and, like, Nimona, because of her story and what she was going through, like, the fact that she had the suicidal ideation.
Yeah.
And then it was Ballister who came and stopped her from killing herself. Like, that was super powerful. And just that moment where he put his hand on her chest and stopped her from destroying herself, I was like... That hit me.
Also, kudos to the voice actress behind Nimona because, oh my god, that it was some good voice acting. Like, she just brought a lot of personality.
Yeah, there's a lot of different, yeah, a lot of different personality to it, for sure. No, most definitely. Okay, so again, Robot Dreams, I really think should be off this list because, again, I haven't met anyone who's actually watched it. And it still
isn't out on digital. I haven't seen it.
To buy or even to stream. Yeah, no, I agree. So, I just want to add like one movie here to this category that I think should be on the nominee list for best anime feature. It was overlooked because it's Adam Sandler. I want to add the movie.
Oh. Leo.
It was on Netflix. Have you seen it? Have you seen it though? Have you seen it?
Oh my gosh.
If you seen it, you know the truth. Michelle, back me up here.
It was a great film. I really enjoyed it. Did you actually see it?
I haven't seen
though,
it, but I saw the trailer for it, and I was just like, okay, I remember 8 Crazy Nights, and I don't want to feel that pain again.
No, it's better than 8 Crazy Nights. Okay. I think so, yeah.
I'll give it a watch. Yeah.
Also on Netflix. So Netflix and Nimona are on... sorry, Nimona and Leo are on Netflix. But Leo is really, really good. It's
I'll give
really
it a watch.
Good. It's amazing. Yeah. Like, if it wasn't for Across the Spider-Verse, I would say that is the best animated feature film.
Actually, speaking of, like, one movie that I think got overlooked was the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie.
I would have to completely disagree with you. It did not get overlooked because it was a clone of Spider-Verse. And it was
on. Oh, come on! It was fun.
it was fun. Go ahead.
When you say a clone, What,
I mean,
in what
the animation
sense?
was similar,
The animation
but
style?
you know, like, still, the rest of it was good.
No, it was good. Like, it was solid, but it was the typical, like, Teenage Mutant Ninja. It was almost the typical Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles origin story all over
Oh.
again. I'm tired of hearing the story. I know about the goo. I know about, like, a Master Shredder. I understand that they have to fight over the fact that people don't like them. They think they're freaks in the city. I get that. I'm tired of seeing that story. I want to, like, they hinted at Shredder at the end of the movie. They should have just gone in with Shredder at the very beginning. Like, I don't need an extra, like, origin story. I thought the voice actors did a great job. It was fun, but it just felt like why did they make this? This is like not bringing anything new. So yeah, but I'm glad you brought it up though, because that a lot of people have forgotten about that movie.
Yeah. Well, you brought up Leo, so.
All right, so going. I'm telling you, Leo's good. Don't sleep on Leo, people. It's amazing. But okay, let's talk about Poor Things for a quick second here. This is a movie that we've all seen, and Bea, how would you kick it off for us? Because you just most re recently saw it.
Oh my goodness. I would have to ask somebody else to start this conversation.
Okay,
No problem. Anyone else want to
I
kick
need
it off?
I'll start off then. Of the three that I've watched, Barbie, Killers of the Flower Moon, and Poor Things, I think Poor Things is the better movie. You're
Interesting.
not gonna agree with that, I know.
No, and we've talked about this on the server. I just like it. I see why I was nominated. I see why I was nominated, but it was just so grotesque in how it went through its plot. I understand that the character and like what Bella was doing. I like her as a character. I like her journey, but it was just so ooh, like it was raw. Like we're in Michelle and I were in the movie theater. And just like oh, you know, it's just like it was
Covering each
just,
other's
and it was like
eyes.
it was a whole theater, and we're all kind of just sitting there watching it together, and it felt awkward, like it felt like we're all just sitting there watching.
It's like that thing where like you're watching an R-rated movie like next to your mom on the couch, and then a sex scene comes on, and you're just like, okay, this is weird.
Yeah, no, that yeah, that's what it felt like, but it was like.
I live for that uncomfortability.
Yeah, but it was just like constant. Like usually in R-rated movies, you get like one, maybe two of those scenes. It was just like a good solid 30 minutes of that stuff, and it was like laced throughout the movie in certain segments, and it was just like, whew, like it was just a lot. And the first 15 minutes also got me because it was just so like gory as well. With the stabbing
Oh yeah,
and
there was a stabbing,
yeah.
wasn't
But
there?
again, it's a solid movie. It's a best picture nominated movie. Like I totally agree with that. I love Bella's arc. Michelle had a great soliloquy in the last podcast about how it's actually the mature version of Barbie. So I don't know if you
Yeah,
want to
I
read
very much
that.
agree. Yes, I was about to say that. But yeah, keep going.
Oh no, I'm done. I'm done. Everyone else speak.
No, I agree, Michelle. That was my thought after watching it last night. It's the same story. It's the same. I don't want to be hated for this, but I feel like the plot or what they were trying to convey was not very original. It was just told in a very, the storytelling
True.
was different, but it told the same story about what it means to be, I guess, a woman. But in a way, that's why I loved Barbie more than Poor
Yeah.
Things. Just because, the way it was portrayed. But anyway, how do I say this? Poor Things was a very beautiful movie. I lived for the costumes and the dresses. It was so beautiful. I loved how they shot it in fisheye. That was my question. If you have any thoughts on it, like, why are there some random moments where it was like through a fisheye
I'd
lens?
say a lot of that was,
A vignette. I don't know what the exact term
well,
for
it's
it that
fisheye
was.
lens, and I'd say a lot of that was like, so the director, I don't know how to pronounce his name, so I'm not going to try. Basically, with
It's like Arturo, right?
something like that, I forget. The point is, like, you know, like my previous movie that I watched from him, it was called The Favorite, and he really likes weird camera angles. Like, that's kind of his thing. Now, I don't think it gets too annoying like a movie like, if anyone's ever seen the movie Battlefield Earth with all the Dutch angles everywhere. That movie is infamous for all the camera.
I think I. Oh no, sorry. Go keep going. I was just saying, I think I've
Yeah,
seen it.
that basically that movie has like a Dutch
Yeah.
angle for every single frame, and I remember critics hated it at the time, but here comes a movie with fisheye lenses and Dutch angles and a distorted perspective everywhere, and the critics just gobble it up. I think the difference
Yeah.
between that and here is there's a lot more, I'd say, I don't know, intention behind the angles, because the entire world is intentionally bizarre. You got a guy who burps bubbles,
Yeah, he was
and you have
awesome.
a like a half chicken, half dog, whatever or whatever it was, hybrid, and you just have all these weird elements in the movie that, in a way, the weird camera angles kind of work for it, I think.
Yeah, and I also love the color correction for Poor Things as well. That was really, really well done.
Yeah, my sister added that it felt like she was watching like an old Dolly movie, Salvador
Actually,
Dali.
yes,
Oh,
It reminded her
that
of
actually
that.
does sound correct, yeah.
Wow, I never thought about that at
Yeah, I
all.
actually recently.
I want to put it to this group.
No,
I'm
I
sorry,
did
go ahead.
recently visit the Dalí Museum, and one of the Dalí Museums in Spain, and it was like, I can definitely see how you'd come out of like that conclusion. Yeah.
There wasn't there like there was a building that was, what was the guy's name? Sagrada Familia.
Yes, Sagrada. Yeah,
Gaudi.
that's Sagrada Familia. That's in Barcelona or Barcelona, as we call it. Yep.
Yeah, I think there was a building in there that is pretty reminiscent of Gaudi. Is it Gaudi?
Yeah,
Gaudi. Oh my goodness.
it
I
was
can only say
Gaudi.
this in a podcast if I'm not even sure of the name.
Yeah.
I love the aesthetic. I really love how pretty it was. I love
Yeah.
the big puffy sleeves.
No, completely agree. Completely agree. I was gonna ask this group because I asked the last group on our previous podcast episode. You mentioned that it wasn't doing anything new from a plotting standpoint, and I mean that's kind of true for like pretty much every movie because like you know there's really no new
Oh,
story,
yeah.
really. It's just a lot of like twists on things, but I was liking the story to a weird telling or a weird version of the prodigal son parable from the Bible, where I would say Bella is the prodigal son, Godwin is God, like they actually call him God, like that's her creator.
Yeah.
And then the brother, older brother who stays behind is like her betrothed who kind of stays behind and stays with the father all the way to the end. Obviously not the exact same story, but she does ultimately come back for a different reason, but she comes back and like settles back into the estate kind of thing. So I was just kind of interested when I was thinking about that is like, wow, that's a cool way to take something that's like a lot of people know and are familiar with, but kind of flip it on its head a little bit. So I thought from a plotting standpoint, Poor Things did a great job. And I also loved when she came back and found her like or her original husband came back and found her. And then we realize like this is why she killed herself at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, I can see that.
All right, very cool. Michelle, you have any thoughts?
I'm keeping myself from saying anything. Anyway.
Just like to wrap up Poor Things, it was very whimsical and graphic and disturbing in some ways, and I feel like that's a great representation of being a woman, like the things that women go through at the hands of other people is very disturbing, and it It can be beautiful at times, and like learning who you are is a beautiful thing, but also it's very horrifying, and the things that you have to go through to just get to where you want to be sometimes is compromising and it's ugly. And I just think it was like a great, it was like a very full picture, not leaving anything out of like the experience of a lot of women. So yeah.
Beautifully said, Michelle. I couldn't have said it any better. Yes, you articulated what I was thinking beautifully.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. We don't have much more time. So I do want to just hit on this topic because it was kind of a hot topic when I was watching Threads, the Threads posts coming about the Oscars. Oh. So for Best Actress, there were a lot of people who were nominated. But the two that were like the main ones were Emma Stone for Poor Things, of course, and then Lily Gladstone for, I don't know why I'm forgetting this movie's name, Killers of the Flower Moon, right? And so Lily had already won for dramatic, best actress for best feature drama at the Golden Globes, and she won at the SAG Awards. So like essentially the kind of trend is that if you win both of those, you essentially like most of Hollywood has already voted. The actors have voted and the press have voted. So there's like makes a big group of the Academy. So it makes sense just from a number standpoint that you would win in the Oscars category. And it's supposed to be a big night for her, like in the sense that it would be the first win for a Native American at all at the Oscars. And since the tepid past of, you know, Native Americans at the Oscars and in Hollywood has been, you know, not good. That's the best way I can say it right now. My mind's blanking out the words. So Emma Stone definitely like deserved to win. So I'm not saying she didn't deserve to win. She did an amazing job in Poor Things. But I think the subtlety of Lily Gladstone's performance is being overlooked because of Emma Stone's like Poor Things performance was just so like over the top. Like everything was just like a beat. Everything was like a note. Like it was just huge and like in your face. Whereas Lily Gladstone's performance was very subtle, very minuscule, but you believed her from the very moment that she stepped on screen. So I wanted to put that out there. Do y'all think she was snubbed for not winning at the Oscars?
Yes and no. Like, so you ever see those? So occasionally it happens every once in a blue moon where the Oscars, like, you know, have nominees where multiple nominees are really, really good and they're competing against each other, essentially. And figuring out who was better is kind of like, you know, like calling the race by a hair, essentially.
Right.
So. Right. I think both Emma Stone and Lily Gladstone were really, really good at what they were doing. And, like, the idea that one, like, you know, was like, of course, you can't give two women Best Actress Oscars. Like, it can't be a tie. There has to be one, so...
Right.
That's a hard one for me, because Lily Gladstone was really good, and Emma Stone was also really good.
Yeah. I think also this is where I would say, because I believe Emma, that was her second win. So I would say maybe give it to Lily because Emma had already won one.
I don't know.
That's just, again, that's just me. But
no, I hear that argument with wins and nominees before where, like, you know, so it's like, oh, this person's got three nominations or this person's got four wins or whatever and such. And therefore, like, the new award should go to, like, someone new that doesn't already have awards. I don't know how I feel about that, but that's also me putting out like what the Oscars were originally intended for, which was to essentially control filmmakers. So,
yeah, I mean, that's true too. I think it's just we need to see new talent, right? Yeah. All the time, right? Not that Emma Stone's old, but it's just that like we need to consistently need to see new talent rise. And one way is to get awarded at the Oscars so you can get more work. So again, Emma Stone totally deserved it. Not hating on her. She did a wonderful job. Michelle, what were your thoughts on that win for Emma Stone? Because I was shocked when I watched it. I was so shocked.
I mean, She went through a lot in that filming process. So, I mean, I don't know. And then she kind of also produced the film.
Yeah, she was a producer.
So
I don't
like. Oh, okay. Yeah, so it was like her, similar to Barbie. Margot Robbie was also the producer on that. But yeah, I mean, like, I mean, I haven't seen Killers of the Flower Moon, so I can't have a full opinion. But I think just everything she had to go through to film that movie was like, that's worth an award to me.
No, for sure. For sure. She put the movie on her back. Like, mm-hmm. you know, the movie doesn't happen without her. So I hear that argument.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel the same way. I feel like she had a lot. I mean, I haven't seen Killers of the Flower Moon, but I feel like she had a lot of material. I mean, and also the movie was about her character, right?
True. That's true.
So yeah, she really had a lot of material. So to, I guess, establish that.
Yeah, super good point. Love to keep talking about it. We just wanted to touch on it just a little bit because it was hot gas that night. And so next question here, was I'm Just Ken the best performance of the night for the Oscars? It's an easy question.
Yes.
I love it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It just proved that Barbie, you know, was such a great film. But go ahead, Alan. I think we lost him. Okay. But yeah, it just proved to me it was just amazing, such an amazing film, such like great costume design, such great mm-hmm. character work done by Margot and by Ryan Gosling. Is that his name? Mm-hmm. Yes. So mm-hmm. it's just a shame that Margot didn't get a nomination for Best Actress. Again, just my personal opinion, should have been mm-hmm. there. And also that Greta Gerwig didn't get a nomination for Best Director. And that leads me into the next topic, because Jonathan Glazer for
what's that movie called? Zone of Interest.
Jonathan Glazer for the Zone of Interest got nominated, and he also got nominated for like screenplay and everything. And I just want to read a little bit from the top of the screenplay. The first line says black. I mean, I should tell you everything you need to know about that movie. It's a black screen. A musical overture begins, inviting descending, and then it literally says in the screenplay, gradually, the white letters fade as they cool, leaving us in blackness again as the music plays in descending patterns for several minutes. Not a couple, not one, but several minutes. And that is true. Like, watching that film, it was just a black screen with music blaring at you. And we were in the theater with other people, and, like, other people started talking. I almost checked my phone. I turned to Michelle, like, are we actually in a movie, or what's gonna happen? So I think it was complete disrespect for your audience for doing that. And I don't think you should have been nominated for Best Director, especially when Greta, you know, dropped Barbie. She should have got that nomination instead of
him. Actually, the one controversy that I definitely completely agree with, I do not understand why Barbie was nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay when it is clearly an original screenplay.
Clearly an original, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly,
like, is it because Barbie is an IP, mm-hmm. which I'm like, okay, well, Toy Story was nominated for Best Original Screenplay, and it has plenty of IP in it. Mr. Potato Head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I agree. I think there's been a lot of, again, being here in Hollywood, there's been a lot of trepidation to give Barbie its due, and I think because of the brand recognition, because people think it's like an easier movie to make. And I just think when you're working with brands and IP that are well established, and you do something that it wasn't poor things, but you flipped it on its head. You made fun of the corporation Mattel right in the movie for everyone to see, for the whole world to see. And you made over $1 billion. Like, you got to give that movie some love, you know? And it got love because of the category, the new category in the Oscars, where if you make the most money, you get an award. So it got that love, but like, at least get a Best Picture, Best Director nomination for Greta.
I'm just shocked that Mattel signed off on a movie where Barbie literally complains about fascism.
Yeah, and a great way of doing it too. It actually explained socialism,
fascism.
No, fascism.
I don't control the railways communism. Or the flow of commerce.
Yes. Yes, there you go. That's perfect. But Bea, this is one of your favorite movies of the year as well. So, what are your thoughts on Barbie and where it landed as far as nominations?
Oh my goodness, I'm not sure if I can say, like, well, it was a good movie. I loved it. It was It was a perfect summer movie. That's how I would say it.
Yeah.
And it did get a lot of publicity. I mean, rightfully so. I love how, yeah, you said like it flipped it on its head. Like it's a different way of telling a story. And you know, Barbie rediscovering like who she was and, you know, finding her identity. I loved all of that. We talked about this, Jesus, right?
Yeah.
This is why I'm here too.
Yes.
Is I felt like Barbie was a great movie, but that it could have trusted its audience more.
Oh.
In terms of, you know, there was a narrator in the story. And I love how they would, you know, insert all of that. There was one time when Margot Robbie didn't have makeup on, and then they were saying how, you know that Margot Robbie's not the perfect, what's this, actress
Barbie.
To say that, you know, she wasn't beautiful or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. And what was I trying to say? Yeah, I felt like it could have trusted its audience more, because I feel like it was defining things during precious moments when the audience could have just, you know, just reflected on it by themselves. I mean,
wow.
you can trust the people. They would understand.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's just how I felt, but it was a good movie overall.
I've never heard that criticism, and I think that's very fair. I do think the use of a narrator was a little weird when I first heard it. It was cool, but it did feel like a lot on the nose in certain moments. Completely agree.
Well, to be honest, like that itself, in a way, like it's kind of a parody of if anyone's seen like a bunch of like, you know, adaptations recently, where whether it's like Tom and Jerry or the Smurfs movie or Ella Enchanted and so on and so forth, where a character goes from a fantasy world and goes through a portal to the real world, those tend to have narrators.
Yeah, but see, I think that's where, if you know, if you're looking to get more Hollywood recognition, I think that's where criticism comes in, because people look at those movies as like, oh, okay, those are like kids' movies. They need a narrator to explain things to the audience, kind of thing. I'm not saying that's true. It still got a Best Picture nomination, but maybe that hurt it a little bit, maybe in some of the other categories.
Mm-hmm. And I think like it also works. I mean, it works within the movie. It doesn't feel like it's out of place. Like it's a little cheeky, you know. That's how it is.
Mm.
But sometimes like I'm trying to find like a specific section where I felt that way, but sometimes I feel like it's too much in your face. Like a lot of things are in your
too
face
self-referential.
Already. So you can just pull back a little bit and give it to. Yes, 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 yes. It's very self-aware. So you can be a self-aware movie without having to explicitly say that I'm self-aware. I don't know. that's just how it felt for me in some moments. Not
yeah,
all of
fair.
It.
Yeah. No. I agree with that. That's very fair. Michelle, did you have any more thoughts from a screenplay perspective?
I mean, I think everyone covered it. I don't really have anything to add.
For sure. For sure. But yeah, I think like the discussion with Barbie, even though it didn't get a lot of like wins or a lot of nominations, I think it's going to be a film that's going to be discussed for like a very long time.
Oh, yeah. It made over $2
right?
billion.
Because
dollars,
of the
it?
Impact it has. Did it get to 2 billion?
Wait, I thought it got to...
We don't have to fact check that.
Okay.
We'll just say, I believe you. I believe you. I believe you. I just, that's, wow. That's amazing. But I think just like what you can do with a brand and what you can do when it comes to recognizing women and diverse talent as well in the industry. And then also from behind the camera standpoint, having a talent like Margot Robbie produce, you know, find, she found Greta, she got the script together. You know, she brought the whole team together. She brought the whole production together. I just think just an amazing feat. And if it wasn't for Barbie, I don't think Oppenheimer would have had financial success either, in my opinion. Because the whole Barbenheimer,
oh yeah, that thing was,
you know, marketing campaign. That was bonkers.
Yeah, kind of a brilliant marketing campaign too. It's like, hey, like here's Barbie, and here's this. Basically, here's this bright pink movie with a woman as the lead character being released the same day as this really dark, gritty movie with a guy.
Yeah.
The contrast, like, it's...
Definitely awesome. No, definitely awesome contrast. All right, we'll wrap it up here with one last question. And this is kind of like a fun question for the group. What are your anticipated movies for 2024?
Ooh. I'm actually really looking forward to The Challengers.
I haven't heard of that one. What's The Challenge?
It's basically Zendaya, and she has this she's a tennis player, and she's got these two guys. Like, it's a love triangle. Well, I don't know about a love triangle. It looks a little raunchier than that. Basically, she's got these two guys that really want her, yeah. And they're all tennis players, and I guess it turns into a really tense love triangle, and it just looks good. Like, so I'm anticipating that.
Yeah, the drama looks very spicy. Yeah,
it was supposed to be released last year, but for some reason they delayed it. Continue.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm looking forward to Wicked and Inside Out 2. I think those are my two. I'm really hoping Wicked is as amazing as it was on Broadway. But, I mean,
it looks it's a really challenge. Good based on the trailer.
Yeah, but it could also be bad. Yeah. So I'm hoping it's great. I'm hoping for the best.
I think it's got...
Yeah, Ariana Grande, I wouldn't know if I want to trust Ariana Grande with that role, in my opinion, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to, too. But I love the musical. So that's why when I finally go see it in the movie theaters, I'm just going to take a step back and enjoy it, because I feel like it's hard to when you already have a reference. So they have big shoes to fill, for sure.
That's true. I hope it's also successful because of the book trilogy.
Yeah.
There's more story past the first story. So I hope it is financially successful so they can make more of those movies. And I will say, for my pick for most anticipated movie of the year is Civil War.
Oh.
It's coming out in a couple weeks. I'm not trying to put a damper on things, but I mean, I'm trying to see and maybe do a little prepping, if you know what I'm saying. But anyways, we don't have to get into it, but.
No, I can see why people are anticipating Civil War. It's being heavily marketed. I just, I'll just put it this way. I'm not a fan of the premise.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm definitely not a fan of the premise either. It's just, it's crazy that we had to even think about this in 2024.
Yeah.
You know, let the 1800s die. we don't need to revisit those.
Oh, well, I don't mean like that as far as the premise. It's more so the world building sounds a little lazy.
Okay.
We'll have to get into that
some other time. Yeah. Awesome. Well, I want to thank everybody for being here on the Mustard Gravy Podcast, episode 149. We're one episode away from 150. So yeah, thank you everybody for listening. Thank you for the loyal fans. But again, thank you to our guest hosts for today, Bea and Holland. Really, really appreciate you so much. Thank you very, very much for jumping on the podcast with us today. And of course, thank you to our host, our longtime host as well, Michelle. We really appreciate you. Awesome. Well, that's all the time we have for now. Our next episode will be about The Chosen Season 4. So if you want to listen and subscribe for that, we'll be talking about The Chosen Season 4. Anyways, take care and stay musty.